This is an iHeart podcast.
Debate takeaways with me, with Megyn Kelly, with Brittany Mayer. We talk about 9/11. Sean Parnell is here. It's a big night tonight on I'm Right. Okay, I'm sure you've spent the day consuming post-debate analysis. Trump took on Dome last night, and so I'm just going to lay it out for you. Don't really care if you're offended by what I'm about to say. We have to be honest about some things. So here we go. It wasn't a good night. I'll get to the reasons why in a moment. There is a silver lining at the end of this if you want to hang on, but it wasn't a good night. It wasn't a good night. And I understand what everyone, myself included, is screaming today. I understand everyone is screaming today about the moderators. Moderators this, moderators that. And yes, of course, the moderators were awful.
They have abortion in the ninth month.
There is no state in this country where it is legal to kill a baby after it's born. Madam Vice President, I want to get your response to President Trump.
Well, as I said, you're going to hear a bunch of lies.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats.
I just want to clarify here. You bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there have been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
Well, I've seen people on television.
Let me just say.
Okay. Yes, the moderators were horribly bad. David Muir, Lindsay Lip injections. They went all in, and we knew they would. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. Dome, she was falling in the polls before this. She was not doing well. The betting odds were all going in Trump's favor. He was the one looking strong. She was the one who needed to have a good performance at this debate. She could not get up there and be the ditzy airhead that she normally is. It would have sunk her campaign. ABC and those two filthy communists who moderated it, they knew that. Did they slip her the questions? Of course they did. Did they decide to go all in and burn down what tiny bit of credibility they may have had left? Yes, of course they did. All those things are true. But it was not a great night for us. It wasn't disastrous. It wasn't the end of the world. Again, I'll get to that in a moment. But it was a bad night for us. And this goes way beyond Donald Trump's performance last night. This is a lesson for you, for me, for everyone watching, running for office, who has run for office, might run for office. You need to remember this now and always. Always, always fight your battle on your battlefield. There are endless military books and proverbs and sayings that have been written about exactly this. You choose your battlefield. If I am a boxer and you are a wrestler and we get in a fight, you want to go to the ground. You should not stand and box with me. I want to stand up. I want to keep it off the ground because I don't want to wrestle with you. And if I'm able to stand up, I will win. If you're able to get it to the ground, you will win. The one who decides what the subject is, the one who chooses the battle during the debate, will be the winner of the debate. And what blows me away, what made me so mad as I watched this horrible performance last night from Donald Trump, what blows me away is Trump knows how to do that. He knows how to stay on message and choose his battle. Do you remember the first debate with Joe Biden? January 6th came up. And but before I play it, remember that these debates aren't for you or me. I know I'm already voting for Trump. I know who I'm voting for. The debates are not for you. They're not for me. These debates are for the norms, the normies. I don't really know. I don't follow politics. It's for those people. And as passionate as I am about January 6th, the evil things the government did on that day and has done to those political prisoners ever since, the evil things they're doing to Trump, I'm passionate about January 6th. I am. The average American voter doesn't want to hear about it, doesn't want to talk about it. They don't care. And if you talk about it, you're losing. Donald Trump knew this in the first debate. Jake Tapper, of course, throws some loaded question at Donald Trump about January 6th. You want to see a masterclass at you choosing what you want to talk about? Look at the first version of Trump.
As president, you swore an oath to, quote, preserve, protect, and defend, unquote, the Constitution. What do you say to voters who believe that you violated that oath through your actions and inaction on January 6th and worry that you'll do it again?
Well, I don't think too many believe that. And let me tell you about January 6th. On January 6th, we had a great border. Nobody coming through, very few. On January 6th, we were energy independent. On January 6th, we had the lowest taxes ever. We had the lowest regulations ever. On January 6th, we were respected all over the world. All over the world, we were respected. And then he comes in, and we're now laughed at. We're like a bunch of stupid people. That what happened to the United States' reputation under this man's leadership is horrible, including weaponization, which I'm sure at some point you'll be talking about, where he goes after his political opponent because he can't beat him fair and square.
Oh, my gosh. Just hang that in a museum somewhere. That's Donald Trump painting a masterpiece on how to debate, how to stay on your message, ignore their bad framing. You talk about what you want. You stay on. It was perfect. It was perfect. I stood up in my house as I was watching that, and I cheered. I stood up and cheered. It was that good. Now, I know Joe Biden dropped out of the presidential debate. Apparently that version of Donald Trump did too, because here was the same question from last night, and here's how he answered it.
Mr. President, on January 6th, you told your supporters to march to the Capitol. You said you would be right there with them. The country and the world saw what played out at the Capitol that day, the officers coming under attack. Aides in the West Wing say you watched it unfold on television off the Oval Office. You did send out tweets, but it was more than 2 hours before you sent out that video message telling your supporters to go home. Is there anything you regret about what you did on that day?
You just said a thing that isn't covered. Peacefully and patriotically, I said during my speech, not later on. Peacefully and patriotically. And nobody on the other side was killed. Ashley Babbitt was shot by an out-of-control police officer that should have never, ever shot her. It's a disgrace. But we didn't do this group of people that have been treated so badly. I ask, what about all the people that are pouring into our country and killing people that she allowed to pour in? She was the border czar. Remember that. She was the border czar.
What was that? Taking the bait. Taking the bait. Playing defense. Kamala Harris and the debate moderators, they're one and the same. They came into that debate knowing how to get under Donald Trump's skin if he was to allow them. Remember, you decide if you're offended or not. I don't decide. That's why I tell you all the time, I don't care if you're offended. I don't care if you're offended right now. That's a choice you've made. I haven't made it. You decide your emotional response to the things that are said to you. Donald Trump, in the first debate, he let all that stuff bounce right off him. Nothing. Last night, Kamala Harris and her team very clearly came in with a plan to bait Donald Trump, get him off message, and get him playing defense. At one point in time, they had Donald Trump fact-checking them about just how many hundreds of millions of dollars his father left him.
I grew up a middle-class kid raised by a hardworking mother who worked and saved and was able to buy our first home when I was a teenager. The values I bring to the importance of home ownership, knowing not everybody got handed $400 million on a silver platter and then filed bankruptcy 6 times, is a value that I bring to my work to say we are going to work with the private sector and home builders to increase 3 million homes, increase by 3 million homes by the end of my first term.
Your response? First of all, I wasn't given $400 million. I wish I was. My father was a Brooklyn builder, Brooklyn, Queens, and a great father, and I learned a lot from him. But I was given a fraction of that, a tiny fraction, and I built it into many, many billions of dollars, many, many billions. And when people see it, they are even surprised. So we don't have to talk about that. Fracking? She's been against it for 12 years.
people don't care. They can't afford eggs. People are watching the American dream disappear in front of their eyes. They don't want to hear you talk about your inheritance. It was a bad performance. It's terrible. It's the worst I've ever seen him do. And juxtapose that with Dome, it's the best I've ever seen her do. I know, don't yell. I know. She lied the whole time. I understand that. She lied the whole time, came off as nervous in the beginning. She came in there. She didn't look like the ditzy queen she actually is, which is a win for them. She was on message, got him playing defense most of the night. I will say this. It took him too long to get warmed up. By now, most people had turned it off. But towards the end, Trump was getting much better about getting on message, getting his points across.
So she just started by saying she's going to do this, she's going to do that, she's going to do all these wonderful things. Why hasn't she done it? She's been there for 3.5 years. They've had 3.5 years to fix the border. They've had 3.5 years to create jobs and all the things we talked about. Why hasn't she done it? She should leave right now, go down to that beautiful White House, go to the Capitol, get everyone together and do the things you want to do, but you haven't done it and you won't do it because you believe in things that the American people don't believe in. You believe in things like, we're not going to frack, we're not going to take fossil fuel, we're not going to do things that are going to make this country strong, whether you like it or not. We can't sacrifice our country for the sake of bad vision. But I just ask one simple question. Why didn't she do it? We're a failing nation. We're a nation that's in serious decline. We're being laughed at all over the world. All over the world, they're laughed. I know the leaders very well. They're coming to see me. They call me. We're laughed at all over the world. We're going to end up in a third world war, and it'll be a war like no other because of nuclear weapons, the power of weaponry. I rebuilt our entire military. She gave a lot of it away to the Taliban. She gave it to Afghanistan. What these people have done to our country, and maybe toughest of all, is allowing millions of people to come into our country. Many of them are criminals, and they're destroying our country. The worst president, the worst vice president in the history of our country.
That was awesome. That should have been the opening statement. You had 3.5 years. Why haven't you done it? It should have been every answer. You had 3.5 years. Why haven't you done it? You had 3.5 years. Why haven't you done it? That was excellent, though. Took them a while to get warmed up. Now, before we get to Megyn Kelly and her savaging of the moderators, allow me to throw this silver lining in all this. It was a bad night. No question, it was a bad night. All right. If you pay attention at all to the various focus groups they do from these debates, they'll find groups of undecided voters. Tons of people do this now. Undecided voters were not blown away by Kamala Harris's performance. They didn't think Donald Trump did well. They didn't think she did well. They were very aware of how biased the moderators were. So the silver lining is maybe the American people, even the norms and normas out there, understand a rigged debate when they see one, and this really won't affect much. And I don't think it will. It's now about blocking and tackling. The debate's over. Dig in. Go win the presidency, all right? Now, Megyn Kelly wasn't too happy about the moderators.
I'm disgusted. I'm ashamed of those moderators at ABC News. They did exactly what their bosses wanted them to do. It was 3-1. It's very easy to look like you know what you're doing when both moderators are entirely on your side.
Well, hard to argue with any of that, nor would I argue with Megyn Kelly about something like that anyway. She'd probably kill me. Joining me now, Megyn Kelly, journalist, host of the Megyn Kelly Show, which is amazing, SiriusXM Triumph Channel 111, every weekday at noon Eastern Time. Megyn, okay, so David Muir and Lindsay Lip injections, they carried Kamala Harris through the debate. We knew they were going to carry her through the debate. They went all in, and they just look, credibility obviously wasn't a concern. They were going all in trying to win an election. It was obvious.
Oh, 100%. I have so many feelings about it. I'm actually really looking forward to hearing how you're feeling too, because I'm angry. I'm kind of down about it. I feel just depressed about what happened last night. frustrated. I realize that what you and I are doing in our independent lane is the answer and the antidote to this terrible thing that's happened to the profession of journalism. But right now, there's a presidential election to win. And we have these very powerful forces working to undermine one candidate in a way I've never seen before, Jesse. This is, I don't know, 16 was bad, but I think there was still at least the semblance of we want to remain respectable and be perceived by some people as objective. And it's gone. It's gone, and yet they still have a fair amount of power. These two out there, I mean, it's smart he was wearing that blue and she had on that sort of bluish gray top because that's who they are. They wore their team colors and they were there on a mission. And I don't care how dodgy and stiff David Muir makes his face. He was as bent as they come when it comes to his bias and this race. Going into, who the hell watches ABC World News tonight? I mean, that it really, honestly, it's mostly for octogenarians. I don't watch that. None of us watches this. But I saw the Media Research Center report saying that they're the most biased of the three. They're most biased out of NBC and CBS as well. Almost, it was something like 92 or 93% positive stories for Kamala Harris, 97% negative for Donald Trump. That's shocking even to me. And last night, we saw that on full display. No Republican should ever agree to go on this channel for a presidential debate ever again.
So why do they, Megan? Because you're 100% right with all that. Why do we do this every time? Why is this, what is this Republican need where they feel obligated to walk into the lion's den every time? And I'm not here saying that I should be moderating one of these debates. I'm a complete biased partisan human being. I shouldn't be moderating it either. But why do Republicans feel like they have to accept the ABC debate and they just have to accept whatever couple commies they happen to roll out there? I don't understand this way of thinking. Why?
Mm-hmm. Habit. It's just habit. That's the way it's always been. That's the way they're used to operating. They don't really see another choice. And on the subject of bias, you actually could do it, Jesse. You're not required to be unbiased to host a presidential debate. It's fine. I can guarantee you Jake Tapper and Dana Bash hate Donald Trump, but they did a good job at that June debate. You could not see their hatred or their bias. That's fine. That we can't ask for more than that from journalists. They're entitled to have opinions about the news that they cover and the subjects they cover. They're just not entitled to share it in the context of their interviews, their town halls, or their big presidential debates. That's what we're asking of them. It's not too high a bar. Be fair. Be equally tough on both sides. That's why I feel like I could do this. I can't stand Kamala Harris. I really hope she loses. But if you were to watch me moderate a debate between these two, you would not see me be any harder on her than I would be on Donald Trump. And I have a record that reflects that. They won't do it because their politics are everything to them. So they refuse to check their bias. They all sit around in these rooms. I've been in them where they don't even see the bias. They think this is just what's dignified, what's required to be a big J journalist who went to one of these, you know, whatever schools. So it's groupthink. But on the Republican side, they need to understand that we're in a new ecosphere now. And if I were Trump and I really wanted to do another debate, I don't know whether he's feeling that or not. Doesn't sound like it. I would say I'll do it one of two ways. Either it's just the two of us, or there is no moderator. Or I pick one moderator and you pick the other. And then we go. You know, and you could brainstorm on how you want to do that. He wants to pick somebody who would just cross-examine her, and she wants to pick somebody who would just cross-examine him, or he wants to pick the person who will ask him questions, whatever. But the current system is not working. It's not working for Republicans only, and therefore it must be thrown out and we have to start again.
Megan, I want to wrap up with this. How do you think he did? I thought that was one of the worst debate performances I've seen from him. His first debate, he was so on message, didn't walk into these bear traps they were obviously setting for him. And he walked into them routinely last night. He's talking about Project 2025. He's talking about the exact amount of inheritance he got. It seemed like they walked in with the plan to bait him, and it worked.
He took the bait on everything. It's like me on the side lawn with my dog Strudwick, just to throw the liver snap and he will run at it no matter where I throw it. That was a mistake, but I will say I felt sorry for him. I mean, I felt sorry for him because he was in a foxhole and there were three people shooting down at him. And it's a very tough situation to get yourself out of. I mean, I think he did the best he can. He did the best he's capable of at this point. Could somebody else have done better? Yeah, I think J.D. Vance, probably if he had been in that situation, and he will be soon, he could have done better. But I really had, I had sympathy for Trump because what a difficult situation when all three of them are piling on and there is no lifeline anywhere.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. I said that was the last one, but this one is. Does it matter? I know that it's not nothing. The first presidential debate is something. People do watch it. They make decisions on it. But does it matter that much?
No, it doesn't. And I don't think this is going to change the election results, or maybe not even the poll results. Maybe a couple of days we get some polling bounce for her. But I don't think so. I think people are pretty dug in. You'd need a huge momentum shifter in order to really affect the polls. That's not what happened on Tuesday night.
Megan, you are the best. Come back soon. All right. Brittany Mayer, independent journalist, joins us next. I want to hear what she has to say about all this. But first, I want to tell you about a movie coming out. Matt Walsh, of all people, it's so great that it's Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh goes undercover as a DEI specialist. And to watch him dryly just harass the worst people in our society, it murders me. I'll be honest, it murders me. And probably the best part about this is it's safe for the whole family. You can't go to the movies anymore with the whole family. Now, kids, dad, mom, whoever, neighbors, go buy some tickets. Go pre-order some tickets. It helps them stick it to Hollywood. Go pre-order your family's tickets for amiracist.com. That's the name of the movie, Am I Racist? Amiracist.com. Go get your tickets, all right? We'll be back.
He is more interested in defending himself than he is in looking out for you.
It's just a soundbite. They gave her that to say. To Washington, D.C., and let her sign a bill to close up the border, because they have the right to do it. They don't need bills. They have the right to do it. The president of the United States, you'll get him out of bed. You'll wake him up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Right. You'll say, come on down to the office. Let's sign a bill. She gave up at least 12 and probably 14 or 15 different policies. Like, she was big on defund the police. In Minnesota, she went out. Wait a minute. I'm talking now. If you don't mind, please. Does that sound familiar?
Okay. Trump did have some good moments last night, some zingers out there. Overall, you know my thoughts on it. I already told you, but I want to know what Brittany's thoughts are. Joining me now, independent reporter, founder of Rooted Wings, friend of the show, Brittany Mayer, joins us. Okay, Brittany, everyone knows my thoughts by now. I thought it was a terrible night. In the end, I don't know that it'll matter. I think we rebound and block and tackle from here, but I thought it was awful. He was on defense all night. What'd you see?
Yeah, definitely on defense. Hey, but here's my overall perspective and takeaway is what we saw last night is it is the establishment machine again propping up their candidate. And in that, the loser is the American people. So I actually think that it was a win when you look at it that way, because once again, we see Donald Trump as being anti-establishment. He is not held up and propped up by the establishment machine. It was 3-1 all night long. So in that perspective, I actually think that Donald Trump came out very strong. Of course, he had to be on defense because the machine has been after him for years. And I think the American people are going to take that away and see it as relatable. They relate to Donald Trump. Kamala Harris is a career politician. She is not relatable. And she's now being used and propped up as the media darling by the machine. And I think that's terrifying.
Okay, so the night wasn't a complete disaster for Dome the way I assumed it was, because she's such a ditzy airhead. She was obviously prepared with the questions, I'm sure, ahead of time in speeches, but she still has to get back out there and, as you just pointed out, relate to people now. Do you even bother with another debate if you're Trump or if you're her? Who wants one? Who doesn't want one?
Look, I think that Trump shines when he is doing those long form interviews that he was doing. He did one with Aiden. He had another one with Sean Ryan. Those speak to the heart of the American people. I think the debates, we're past the point of needing debates to prove which candidate is the media's darling. We know that they're going to embrace Kamala and prop her up because she is the machine's pet. I think that Trump shines in the long form interviews that Kamala can't do. So I would encourage Trump to continue with that, continue with his rallies that people do show up for and do stay for. I think that really does speak to the heart of the American people. And I another takeaway that I had that I just want to touch on that I think is really important is after this debate is said and done, next week, people aren't going to still be talking about this debate. It was not memorable. But what people are going to remember and feel, the average American, when they go get groceries, that they can't afford groceries, that their rent is tripled or quadrupled, that they can't get insurance because rates are out of touch. And I think that that on those issues alone, Trump dominates. And they will remember that at the end of the debate, Trump said, it's been 3.5 years of this. You want 3.5 more years? Do you want four more years of this? And the average American knows that they don't feel safe. They don't feel like they can afford America. They don't feel like this is America anymore. And I think that that's where Trump needs to stay focused.
How do you think he handled the whole abortion thing? Now, I disagree with Trump and his stance on the issue, but that's not important. That debate wasn't for me. It was for all the normie people who don't know who they're voting for. I actually thought he handled that fairly well, pointing out their radicalism because they're a bunch of demonic baby murderers.
Yes, and I think he could have gone in even heavier on that. I was on the edge of my seat hoping that he was going to pull up her receipts, and he didn't. But Harris's receipts on abortion as a senator in California are diabolical. I don't know if you know this, Jesse, but Harris has voted against the efforts to protect babies born alive in California, not once, but twice. And she also voted against an act that would have set limitations on pain-capable unborn child protections. So she is 100% a monster when it comes to our unborn. And I wish that Trump would have laid into that even heavier. You know, we talk about the pets being eaten by the Haitians out in Springfield, but the reality is that if Kamala and Walz get in, we are going to witness the diabolical murdering of the unborn unlike we've ever seen it in this country.
Yeah, speaking of that comment, the pets being eaten, I actually didn't like it. And it's not because it wasn't accurate. It obviously is accurate as hard as they're trying to cover it up. It was kind of disconnected. Wired in people like you are going to know exactly what he was referring to. But again, the undecided norm watching just knows he dropped some weird line about dogs being eaten. I don't think it was articulated that well.
Yeah, I agree. I think what he could have done is he could have said, you know, done his little Trumpism where he says, you know, the pets, maybe they're getting eaten in Springfield. Maybe they're not. Maybe ducks are being pulled out of the pond. Maybe they're not. But what we do know, and then he could have gone into all the data we have about the safety issues because we have an open border, that we have seen Americans killed by illegal foreigners. They're actually in Springfield, Ohio. There was an 11-year-old boy that was killed by a Haitian illegal foreigner. And I think that he could have directed it, you know, touch on the pet situation and the ducks being pulled out of the ponds, but then redirect America's attention to the fact that we live in an unsafe country right now because of Harris's policy on the border. And he should have stuck there and landed there. But that's what leads me back to say, I think that the average American knows that. And so next week, when this debate is forgotten, people are going to still feel unsafe and know that Kamala is not coming to rescue them.
One thing that stuck out to my wife that I noticed, but it didn't stick out to me the way it stuck out to her, maybe it's just a gender thing, was the handshake in the beginning. Here it was for those who forgot it.
Kamala Harris, what's up, good debate.
Nice to see you, have fun.
Thank you.
Welcome to you both. It's wonderful to have you. It's an honor to have you both here tonight.
Good evening, we are looking forward.
It was so weird. Did you make anything of it?
Yeah, I don't think he wanted to shake her hand. And I think she kind of forced herself upon him. I mean, look, she's all the way over at his podium, which is clearly larger than hers because ABC had to manipulate the optics to make it look like they're the same size. I mean, what a joke. I wouldn't want to shake her hand either. I think that we are past a point in America where we have to play by all these standard optic rules. You know, Kamala Harris has been a massive part of destroying our nation. I don't think she's due a handshake. I don't think there's anything gentlemanly about extending your hand to someone who is at the helm of the ship, creating an incredibly unsafe country for our children. So that was my takeaway. I liked that Trump was hesitant, and then he shook her hand, but I liked that he forced her hand literally in that first take.
Brittany, thank you. I appreciate you. All right. We have little September 11th reflection. It is that terrible anniversary today, and we'll do that in just a moment. So let's talk about something. The corporate world. We're all mad at ABC today. But this is something that's taken place, especially over the last 10, 15 years. The corporate world has just turned disgusting. It's awful. You can't watch TV commercials anymore. And we need to defund them, meaning we need to take our business elsewhere. If you have AT&T for your cell phone service, Verizon, if you have T-Mobile, you need to take your business elsewhere. Oh, but Jesse, I need the coverage. I need a good network. Pure Talk is on the same network. It's the exact same 5G network. You don't sacrifice coverage at all. I switched from T-Mobile. My coverage got better. And I pay half of what I was paying. We have four lines as a family. I pay half of what I was paying before. Switch to Pure Talk, the American-loving company. They're supporting veterans while the other ones are supporting Planned Parenthood. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. All right, it is the anniversary of September 11th today. Everyone has their story. Well, everyone who's old enough has their story about where they were, what they were doing. I know I've told you this before, but I just thought it would be appropriate to just take a minute and just tell you where I was. I was in the Marines already, very young Marine. I'd been in for about a year. I wasn't one of those super patriots who joined afterward. And we'd gotten up that morning. We went and did PT, exercise. It's Marine Corps. So we went on this long run and all kinds of things. And we had just finished this long run. And we were in front of our barracks. And we were just doing some stretching, things like that. And they told us, hey, get up to your room now and turn on the TV. Not exactly a normal order you get. Go watch television. Okay, something big must be going on. So we all scampered up to the barracks. We're all sweaty, covered in sand and everything else. And open up the door, and we get into our barracks rooms. And there was like 10, 15 of us piled in one room. The guys were piled into different rooms. We turn on the television, and one of the towers had been hit. And remember, we had been out PTing. So we were all confused. My first thought, and this was on, it was the main thought in the room, was, did some drunk fly a plane into the tower on accident? How do you hit a tower on accident? We didn't know. We just had no idea. But we're watching, and this is all live. I think it was CNN, and we watched live as a second plane hit the second tower. And now, obviously, we know we're not stupid. We know this is an attack on the country, and we're mad. We're mad, but it wasn't white-hot anger yet. It wasn't, man, these dirtballs, who do they think they are? And we're still watching. And then the towers came down. And everybody watching, every Marine in the room knew what that meant. We knew how many people had just lost their lives, how many innocent civilians had lost their lives. And I'm not a big crier. It's not who I am. I'm just not built that way. But I had tears of rage pouring down my face that day. And I will tell you, I was not alone in that room. We all wanted to go kill somebody. Just me being very honest, we were all ready to go kill everybody, really. That's how we felt about the day. And I recently had a chance to go to New York City and see the 9/11 Memorial Museum. If you're ever in New York City, do it. There are some things that I just feel like every American should do if you get the chance. Do it. Go walk through that and remember. It's a day you should always remember. It's a day I'll never forget. All right? That's all. I just I wanted to share my story, talk to Sean Parnell, his story and everything about that in just a moment. So, let me talk to you about this really quickly. Talk to you about getting a good night's sleep. Last night was debate night. Didn't go great. Not the end of the world, but didn't go great. So maybe you had trouble sleeping. I will tell you, I thought I was going to have trouble sleeping. So the second the debate ended, I did my YouTube live thing, and I was sipping on a little cup of dream powder, hot chocolate, as I was doing it, because it's natural things that put me to sleep. And when I wake up in the morning, I feel amazing. Go get some dream powder from Beam. Drop all the drug stuff, all natural stuff. That's what you need. That's what dream powder is all about. It's a little cup of hot chocolate, puts you right to sleep. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. None of us will ever forget this day. Yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world.
I remember it. I remember it all. It's one of those things, if you're of a certain age, you remember it. Remember where you were, you remember what happened afterwards. Joining me now, my friend, host of Battleground Live, which I would highly recommend you watch, Sean Parnell, also a combat veteran. Okay, Sean, my story, I've already told it. Everyone knows mine on this show. September 11th, where were you? What were you doing? The floor is yours. Tell us about it.
I was a sophomore in college at a small university in Western Pennsylvania. We had just had a big party the night before. And at that party, Jesse, I had had a conversation with my buddies about how our generation never really had an inflection point or a moment that defined who we were. And then I remember waking up on this rundown college couch the next day and, you know, blinked my eyes open and the world was spinning, had the hangover of a lifetime, and all around me were Iron City beer cans and crushed cigarette butts. And I remember staggering over to the television set and turning it on and watching it flicker to life just in time to see an airplane crash into the World Trade Center. And in that moment, just like anybody else who lived through 9/11, I feel like I was shaken to my core. I was angry. I was also afraid. I watched people tumble from those towers and land on the sidewalk on live television, watched people stumble out of that wreckage, you know, covered in thick gray soot. Only thing you could see were bloodshot eyes and a 1,000-yard stare. I think what affected me the most that day, Jesse, and what inspired me to eventually join the military was how our first responders responded. And that was, instead of running away from the flames, I watched one first responder after the next run headlong into them. And as you know, and as the American people know, anyone who lived through that day knows, many of those first responders who stormed into the flames that day and ran up those steps to try to save people that they'd never met before in an act of selflessness that I'd never witnessed in my lifetime up until that very moment, many of those people never emerged from those flames again. And Jesse, I was a kid back then, didn't have good grades, was probably drinking too much, didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And so I figured I'd join the military, get in the fight, and take the fight to the enemy.
You weren't alone in that. And I mean, you post September 11th guys who joined. I was in for about a year before it happened, but it was such a wave of patriotism, patriotic young men stepping up and just, look, doing something about it. How much of that do we still have, Sean? I know those guys still exist. I'm not naive. I'm not going to say those guys are extinct. We don't have any of those anymore. That's not true. There's all kinds of pipe hitters who are in there now and guys who might join one day who can and will do it. But do we have as much as we did before?
You know, Jesse, I'm not sure. I think you're right. An entire generation rose up to serve this country in the wake of September 11th. And had their lives, the trajectory of their lives altered forever in a way they probably didn't anticipate. I have no doubt that young men and women in this country have that selflessness and the metal that's necessary to rise up in a moment like that. But I would be lying to you if I told you that I mean, our country is just fundamentally different today. And, you know, it's been 23 years. It feels like, you know, the focus of our military is lacking. We're not, I mean, obviously we're in the midst of a grave recruiting crisis. Again, I'm not saying that that selflessness isn't out there, that patriotism isn't out there. It is. It just feels like it might be hibernating a little bit. And I shudder to think what would happen in this country if, God forbid, another attack on the scale of September 11th happened. I'd be, you know, with five kids, my friend, it worries me for sure.
Yeah, I think about it all the time. I have a 16-year-old and a 15-year-old, and they're obviously about that age. And look, let's just be frank about it. You and I have talked about this privately. We're friends, but I don't feel like the people who led this country, I don't feel like they necessarily did right by all those patriotic young men who stepped up to fight. And I feel like this next generation being raised by those men, they might view things a little bit differently. You get what I'm saying?
I do. And Jesse, you know, 23 years after 9/11, you'd think it would get a little easier hearing some of the sound bites that you just played or hearing the voicemails that people left their loved ones on that plane.
Oh.
It affects me more today than I think it did when I was young. And it's hard to even talk about. And I remember driving to drop my son off, who is 11, because I've got a 17-year-old, a 15-year-old, two 13-year-olds, and an 11-year-old. So I'm driving the 11-year-old to drop him off at the bus stop today and listening to, you know, some morning show on the radio. And 9/11 sound bites started playing, just like a compilation of them. And my son, you could just see in his young 11-year-old eyes that he was just totally engaged by what he was hearing. And he looks at me with these wide eyes. He's like, "Dad, you lived through this, right?" I'm like, "I did live through this." And I could feel, because they were playing the voicemails of those women calling their husbands, telling them that they love them, that they love their kids, that they're probably never going to see them again. And it hits right here. And 23 years later, it still is emotionally resonant to me. And I think particularly so for a point that you just made, my friend, is that now I know, with the benefit of hindsight, of how this country treated the men and women who served both in Iraq and Afghanistan over 20 years of war. My battalion specialized in Afghanistan. We deployed, we came back. We deployed, we came back. We deployed, we came back. And what do we have to show for it? What do we have to show for the war in Iraq? 20 years of fighting. I'm 43 years old, so half of my adult life, all I've known in my adult life is war. I've had 30 friends die, and I got to add, being completely honest, what was it for? You know, can you honestly look in the camera today, and I'm not asking you this, Jesse, but I'm just saying to anybody out there that's listening or watching, say that this country is better off, or the Middle East is safer for what we did in Iraq and what we did in Afghanistan. What we did in Iraq created a void in Iraq, gave rise to ISIS, it emboldened Iran. Look at what happened with the Afghan surrender. We left American citizens behind. We abandoned our allies. We deposed autocrats in Egypt, in Libya. We tried to do it in Syria. And for what? Thousands of Americans' lives lost, tens of thousands injured, wounded, hundreds of thousands with the invisible wounds of war, you know, blood and treasure that we'll never get back, trillions of dollars spent. It's just really frustrating. So, and I think that's part of the reason why, looking back at 9/11 today, it's still very, very emotionally resonant to me, only maybe in a little bit of a different, more complicated way.
Yeah, I actually don't think you could possibly explain my exact feelings on this any better than you just did. I actually just had a reunion with Marine brothers of mine I was in Iraq with, and every single one of them, to a man, pretty much echoed exactly what you just said. And that is, that's heavy, and it's sad to me that the people who led this country, Democrat and Republican, and the military leaders, they'll never own and they'll never be held to account for what they did with our patriotism. And it bothers me to this day. Sean, my brother, I love you. Always will. You come back anytime. Go watch Sean's show, Battleground. It's sick. It's awesome. Sean's the best. All right. We have light in the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And these things, maybe I'm just getting old. These things get me. They get me more as I get older than it used to when I was younger. Who knows? But after 9/11, there was so much patriotism that was reflected in so many different ways. And the sports arena, before it became all politicized and disgusting like it is now, the sports arena stepped up big time. I remember this. I think I watched the replay of this 20 times. Mike Piazza, this was 10 days after 9/11. Mike Piazza gets up, jacks a homer. Here's how it went.
Lopez wants it away. And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run! Mike Piazza and the Mets lead 3-2.
It's a great moment. It's a great moment. All right. This is a rough show tonight. Be back to do it again tomorrow. See you then.
This is an iHeart podcast.